Good morning. We'll call to order the Senate Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee. This is our first one of the year, so everybody, welcome back. And before I should actually make a special welcome to our newest member, Senator Chris Eaton.
Thank you.
So we're pleased to have you, and I'm sure you've noticed that being here is, like we often say, drinking from a fire hose, and you have a long list of people coming to see you and lobby you on all sorts of issues. And now we get to start making some decisions in committees. But should you have any questions, there's obviously anybody here is willing to jump in and help and answer any questions. And we're very pleased to have you here. So, all right. Okay, well, members, what we're going to do on the agenda today, we have just one bill, and it's not a new one. It is the Event Ticket Practices Regulation, of which we had last year, and then I'll be presenting it. I'm going to ask Senator Gazelka to take over here, and I'll update you on what's been transpiring over the interim on this. So with that, it's all yours.
Well, members, the first item on the agenda is Senate File 425, Senator Gerlach.
Okay.
Welcome to your own committee, Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is, as you know, in the committee on commerce, as you've all participated in, that oftentimes, in fact, most of the time, we find ourselves refereeing disputes among different business interests. And it's not always necessarily just, it's not always easy answers, and they're not always just black and white or philosophical or ideological, but we have to sort of dig in and figure out what's going on in the marketplace. And we all want fair competition. We all want open and free markets. And this bill we had before us last year was not without controversy. And I want to review with you a little bit about what we did last year, and then also what we did with the bill in Judiciary Committee, and then why it's back here, and what are we doing with it. So let me, if I could, very briefly discuss that. And there are at least two amendments that I have here that we can discuss, and then we'll have some testimony from both sides. Members, first of all, what has transpired in the event ticketing industry over the last few years, you may recall in 2007, a bill was passed by the legislature that removed criminal penalties for ticket scalping, which technically is selling a ticket for above its face value in a secondary market, if you will. And that did. It created a secondary market. It meant that a lot of businesses that were located across the board in Wisconsin, Ticket King, StubHub, those types of organizations, actually got to work in the state they lived and came back to Minnesota. That has also now opened up other issues, which we are dealing with today. Last year when I presented this bill, I talked about the central issue being about the ownership of the ticket and what are the rights associated with a ticket. When you buy a ticket to an event or a concert, what rights come with that? What what are you allowed to do with that? What is the role of the primary market, the secondary market, and what's going on there? I put forth that I thought that it was somewhere between full ownership and a lease, that it's somewhere in the middle. And I believe that this bill protects that middle ground. The freedom of consumers to freely transfer or sell or give their tickets, their event tickets in a secondary market, I think is just critical to consumers and to free enterprise and the free market. One interesting development, you have a lot of materials in your packet. And let me just say that to sum this up really briefly with the introduction, and then I would like to move in with a couple of amendments if I could. There's an article, a New York Times did an op-ed piece, and they referenced a study that was done. And I'll just read about two sentences here. It says, this week, the American Antitrust Institute is releasing a report on the paperless ticket market by James D. Hurwitz, an institute fellow and former policy analyst at the Federal Trade Commission. The conclusion, restrictive paperless ticket practices depart from bedrock market principles by unjustifiably limiting consumer choice and suppressing free competition. They also might violate federal and state antitrust and consumer protection laws, and they may warrant legislation to protect the market and consumers. So, members, that's where I believe this bill before you today is about. It's about protecting the market and protecting consumers. What happened to the bill when it left the Commerce Committee last year? We went to Judiciary Committee, had some discussions about it, and we had, I'd say, most of the discussion centered around the problem of bots. If you remember, bots are electronic software programs that are illegal to use. They still happen. Granted, they are difficult to enforce against. So a lot of that, a lot of our discussion centered around how do you get your hands around that. And we left it without a solution at that time. Session ended. The bill was sent back to the Commerce Committee. And what I've decided to do, and there will be the A-10 amendment, which we can take up, that is essentially adding stiffer criminal penalties for the use of bots. And a significant fine, bumping it up to $25,000. And the intent is that this is an economic crime, and so there should be steeper economic penalties. But we can discuss that A-10 amendment in a little bit. So, members, that is the, I guess, the introduction. Again, you've all heard this this bill. You've all been lobbied heavily on it. And what I would like to do, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I do have an oral amendment for the consideration of the committee. If I could, members, if I could draw your attention to line 1.12 of the bill. And you may recall last year we put in place an exemption that a venue accommodating less than 2,500 seats would be exempted from the bill. And the rationale for that was is that those small venues really are not players in the secondary market. There's not a lot of demand and such in the secondary market for those. And so we put that in place. We believed at the time that that threshold accounted for all of the small theaters and venues. But in the interim, it has come to our attention that that actually 2,900, kind of, there's a big gap between the small ones and the large ones. And so, and I'm afraid that if they just add another row of seats, that we'll be back here again. So I would propose to the committee that we on line 1.12 we strike 2,500 and insert 3,000, and that nice round number will accommodate all of the smaller venues that this bill is not doesn't really affect anyway because they're very small venues. So, members, I would propose or move that oral amendment and propose it for discussion.
So, Senator Gerlach moves oral amendment that on line 1.12 we strike 2,500 and replace it with 3,000. Is there discussion? Senator Rest. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I missed it, Senator Gerlach, but did the Judiciary Committee take any action at all, or is the bill that we have before us, the second engrossment, precisely the bill that left the committee?
You know what, that's Gerlach. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest. And that is a good question because I am trying to remember why we're on the second engrossment.
Gerlach, would you tell us where they were?
And Senator Gerlach, I think Chris, Mr. Stang has some information on that.
Yes, there we go.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, the Judiciary did make a they did change the bill a little bit. In the list of prohibited acts, which you'll see on Section 2 of the bill in Subdivision 2, when the bill left Commerce last year, there was an additional prohibited act in terms of bringing legal action against a purchaser who tries to resell a ticket, and they stripped that that additional prohibited act out of the bill and sent it back to us, but that's the only change they made.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gerlach. What was the rationale for stripping that provision? Do you remember, or Mr. Stang? Maybe?
That's a good question, Mr. Chairman. Senator Rest.
I'm
trying to remember. That was a year ago now, and it was kind of a minor change in the committee, and I don't recall exactly the discussion of why that was. I think it was a particular member that didn't feel comfortable with that for a reason, and I don't even remember who, but I remember I thought it was a brief discussion. I don't know if Mr. Stang recalls exactly what the rationale was on that.
Mr. Stang?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, I did not attend that hearing. I don't recall what the genesis of that amendment was.
Senator Rest?
Yeah. I can certainly, Senator Rest, find that out. That was the type of
thing. I think at some point in your presentation later or whatever, indicating the reason that the Judiciary Committee made a change is helpful to the Commerce Committee, Senator
Senator Rest, I think I might be able to get a better answer to you, too. And also, I was just informed, too, that they also took out a private right of action in the bill as well. Mr. Stang, do you recall that, or did you have that on your list as well?
Mr. Stang?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gerlach, I think that came out originally in Commerce. I'm looking at the first engrossment as the bill left here last year, and I think we had already taken that out here.
Okay. All right, so that was done in Commerce then. So the only other item was the other one that Mr. Stang had mentioned. And, again, those are some judiciary reasons and that some members on that committee, and I just don't recall.
Senator Rush, you didn't feel like it did harm to the intent of the bill.
It wouldn't. No. Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, it wouldn't have. I think we're okay with the main thrust of the bill still.
Any other discussion on the oral amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of supporting that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Senator Gerlach. Mr. Chairman, what I thought we could do is because we've previously heard testimony on the bill, and we will again, but maybe we could take up the A-10 amendment so that way any testimony is directed towards a bill. If this amendment were to go on, then it would be to the whole package. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move the A-10 amendment and then have somebody come up to speak briefly to that.
Senator Gerlach. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Gerlach, putting this amendment on sends the bill back to Judiciary?
It will, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest. Yes, it will. In fact, when we left the Judiciary, we knew that would be the case. But they felt that the bill needed some more work, and they wanted to send it back here, and we would work on that over the interim and see what we could come up with. And now we are sort of resetting now this year through Commerce, and it will go back to Judiciary.
And Mr. Senator Chairman, Rest. Senator Gerlach, so this amendment, which is creating crime, is more appropriate to put on here rather than in Judiciary?
Senator Gerlach.
Certainly, yes, and Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, you're right. There has been some of this overlap between the two committees and this bill kind of going back and forth. The other body heard this bill in their Commerce Committee yesterday and adopted this amendment, and we're trying, or didn't they? I thought they did. I'm getting a no. No? Okay. Well, then scratch that. Well, then, Senator Rest, what I thought would be the best is that if we do this, this is the direction, at least, that the Judiciary Committee wanted to go. They sent it back to do some more work. And I thought, well, if we're going to do it here in this committee, I think that this is going to be acceptable to the Judiciary Committee. If not, they can certainly take another crack at it there. But I believe that based on the discussion with the bots that we had last year, that this is something that will be to their liking. This way we're sending a bill to the Judiciary Committee that will, you know, be, I think, a smoother.
Senator Gerlach, then. I'm sorry, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gerlach, just so you know, I'm not comfortable evaluating whether or not this should be a felony or the fine because not serving on Judiciary, I don't believe really an understanding of where this relates in terms of seriousness of crime versus other things. It seems a little bit odd to accept this amendment in this committee when we don't have that kind of jurisdiction.
Okay. I'll tell you, Mr. Chairman, maybe what I'll do is this, because that certainly makes some sense. Why don't we do this then? Let's not. I will withdraw my motion to move the A-10 amendment at this time, and we can certainly we'll take that up in Judiciary then, because the motion will be to send this to the Judiciary Committee.
All right. In fact, we didn't even move it yet. But
I thought it.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I really think that
I think it's best
would be the right thing to do, Senator Gerlach, because it's one thing to have something be a misdemeanor, mm-hmm. but then to, in one case, right off the bat, make it a gross misdemeanor, and then have a, and then create a felony. You know, I'm not comfortable with it, since it was not part of the original mm-hmm. bill, to add that here, although I'm sympathetic to the sense of it, but I agree with Senator Bonhoff. They want
to make
crimes and pay for them, because you know what happens here?
Sure.
It's a fiscal note. That you might not like. So I think
no, and
their jurisdiction is better.
Senator Rest, I accept that. And what one of the points too in at least discussing this amendment here is that because the bots are central to the kind of the issue of this, that this shows a willingness to deal with the issue. It's not perfect. It doesn't go, you know, it doesn't solve the problem, but at least it does something. So at least the committee members today here are aware that this is the direction we'd like to go. So, okay, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gerlach, another issue on line 3.6. My assumption is that you would like to have an oral amendment there to change the effective date to 2012, August 1st, 2012, since,
and you know what?
It's already in there?
Well, no, we had it in this
amendment. Oh, that, because it was in the other.
It's in the A-10 amendment.
Yeah. So if we're not going to take up the A-10 amendment, do you want to move an oral amendment to change that date to 2012?
Well, it is, Mr. Chairman, since it is in the A-10 amendment already, you're saying, I think we'll just the effective date? I guess it doesn't matter. We can. Then we just have to fix the amendment there.
All right.
So you want to, if you want to do that here, we can certainly do that, Mr. Chairman. I'll move an oral amendment to change the effective date to August 1st, 2012.
Thank you. So Senator Gerlach makes an oral amendment on line 3.6 to change the effective date to August 1st, 2012. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Okay.
Senator Gerlach, do you want to bring your testifiers forward now?
We've got some my agenda. Who's ever up? Mike? Who's up first? Joe Wright, it looks like. Mr. Joe Wright. And then if Mr. Jeff Jarpy would be ready.
Yeah, come on up. Good morning, Mr. Wright. Or good morning, Mr. Wright. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record so it's recorded on the audio.
My name is Joe Wright.
Yep, you don't proceed.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. First off, I do have a prepared statement that I'd like to read to you. I'd first like to take this opportunity to thank you all for allowing me here today to testify. My name is Joe Wright, and I live in Maple Grove, Minnesota. I work as a bartender at Lord Fletcher's on Lake Minnetonka, and I'm a single parent of a 10-year-old daughter. I loved attending as many sporting events as possible and concerts that I can every day and every year. I'm here in support of Senate File 425. I'm certain that every sports fan that I know would also support this bill. Restrictive tickets are the latest move by venues and ticketing agencies to make more money off the ticketing, off the tickets by controlling them even after they have been sold. They are called restrictive tickets because the only person who can buy the tickets from an authorized seller would be able to use them at the gate. That is not how the real world works. Who are they to tell myself or anyone else what we can or cannot do with a ticket after we buy it? These type of tickets would be a disaster for someone like me. I work very hard and very long hours to provide for my family. I am not always able to plan months in advance of attending a game or a concert. Sometimes I get off work early because it's slow and at the last minute want to go to a Twins or a Wild game. And thanks to people in places like StubHub or Craigslist, we can get tickets for events on the way to the events. And most time we can get them for less than face value. That is what I call a fair and free market working at its best. To give an example of how restrictive tickets do not work for the hardworking people like myself As past holidays, my daughter and myself bought two tickets for the upcoming Jason Aldean, Luke Bryant concert on February 17th. We have bought these tickets as a gift for the young lady that watches my daughter every night when I go to work. I know she couldn't afford to pay for good seats for the show, but I could. And it's a small price to pay for someone that helps our family so much. If companies like Ticketmaster had their way, what I did for a gift would not be allowed anymore. And that's just not right. Restrictive tickets mean less control, more hassle, and no more competitive pricing. All it would do is put more, have more fees and more monies paid to tickets to the ticketing companies like Ticketmaster. I strongly urge you to support Senate File 425. Thank you for your consideration, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Questions from the committee? Yep. Thank you very much.
You can take it back with you. Jeff.
Was it Mr. Jarpy? Is that right?
It's Jarpy?
Jarpy.
Jarpy. Forgive me, Mr. Jarpy. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Jarpy. I live in, at the present time, in Lilydale, Minnesota. My wife and I moved here exactly 42 years ago at the beginning of January, and we've raised our family here. I've worked here. Both of us have worked here during that time. I'm still working. And over those years, we have attended countless concerts, theater presentations, sporting events, and you name it. I have been to every venue imaginable in the Twin Cities area as well as outside the Twin Cities area during that time, including some that no longer exist. And on behalf of myself and my family directly, and I think on behalf of all Minnesota citizens, I think that Senate File 425 is an important piece of legislation. I echo Mr. Wright's comments that it's a private property issue and the chairman's issue, Senator Gerlach's point that it's a private property issue. Once you buy something, you ought to be able to do with it as you please. Attend the event if you're able to. If you're not able to, give it to a family member, a friend, a business associate, or a charitable organization. I've done all of those from time to time when I've not been able to attend an event for whatever reason. Usually it's a family conflict or a business conflict. I share Minnesota Vikings season tickets with some associates. Those are in the name of one person because that's the way the Vikings require it, but we have six tickets that we split up every year. I've sold those tickets from time to time. Never have sold a ticket to a Packer game. We always go to that one. And not because I'm a Packer fan. From time to time, I have had to sell those tickets. I can think of occasions, one in particular, where I had four tickets because we split them up in different ways each year, depending on people's conflicts. I had four tickets to the season opener when the Vikings were very competitive, and turned out I couldn't go, and I had to sell them, and I sold them at a loss because that's just the way things worked. And to have to sell tickets at the last minute and go through all of the hoops that restrictive computerized ticketing would require, it would be an impossibility. It's just to say that it's inconvenient is a vast understatement. I've bought tickets on the street from sellers. I've sold tickets, as I mentioned. It's a very free and competitive marketplace. I have season tickets also to my college football program, and I have to sell those frequently because I'm not able to attend every game. it isn't here. It's outside the state, so you can't get to every game. But there's plenty of alums around here who want to go back for a game, and I have a network of people that I'm able to easily sell the tickets to. And if not, I use a site like StubHub, which is very convenient to be able to at least recoup some of your investment, not take a loss, and be able to satisfy somebody else that wants to be able to use the tickets. Again, it's a private property, competitive marketplace issue, and I just don't see the point that once an issuer, whether it be a team, Ticketmaster working with another issuer or whoever, disposes of that license to go to the game, that they ought to have some control at the back end. It makes absolutely no sense to me, and I dare say to any other person, fan or patron like me and the members of my family who wish to attend the games and have the opportunity to do so in a very convenient way, a less restrictive way, a much freer way, and a last-minute way than what some people evidently have in mind. And therefore, this bill would allow that to continue. And there's absolutely no economic reason that I can think of that it ought not to continue. One other thing I should mention is that with my Vikings tickets, for at least the last dozen years, I've given tickets to preseason and other games to the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Twin Cities regularly. They must have a record of my having done that personally for at least that many years, and I intend to continue to do it. Now, if I have to give them back to the issuer, then there's an option that is off the table. What's the sense of that? Especially when the tickets cost, currently $125 per game. How can a kid from the Boys and Girls Clubs possibly afford that and be able to go see their heroes play a football game? It's wrong. I think I've covered all of my points. I'm honored and privileged to be here today to state my views as a regular citizen and again, sports fan, patron of the theater and arts, and I think we have a lot to offer here in this state along those lines, and a lot of people that want to take advantage of it, and let's let them continue to do so. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Jarpy, and I appreciate your generosity. You set a good example for the Boys and Girls Club. Thank you very much.
You're
any questions or comments for Mr. Jarpy? Senator Gerlach, do you have any other testifiers?
Thank you. Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Dan Hedlund.
Senator Gerlach, Senator Bonner, if you have a question.
Yeah, I do. Mr. Chair, and Senator Gerlach, could you just comment with regard to what Mr. Jarpy said, that if this didn't pass, that he wouldn't be able to do that? That's not actually true, right? He could continue giving his tickets to the Boys and Girls Club if this bill didn't pass?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoff, the problem is that the movement for restricted tickets is happening all around the country. In your packet, there's even a story about some things that have been happening in other places. And those restrictions inhibit the free transfer of these tickets. And if you have to use a credit card to buy a ticket and then you give it to somebody, they don't have your credit card or they're not there in person. And all of those types of things restrict the movement of buying and selling and transferring of these tickets. So it certainly could. I'm not saying directly, instantaneously or something like that. But the whole idea is that as this movement of restrictions takes place, more and more options for fans and consumers to have control over what they've bought is diminished.
Senator Bluff.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gerlach, but currently there's no proposal to do anything like that currently on the table with regard to not being able. correct? We don't
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonhoff, yes, remember last year there are certain venues, I believe, and you could certainly question the different venues when they come up to testify, but they have contractual arrangements and they have, I believe they have a menu of choices when they contract, when the venue contracts with, say, Ticketmaster and says, here's our choices. They can opt for certain restrictions or not, and sometimes they do that and sometimes they don't. There have been some restricted ticket sales in Minnesota, but I'm sure they'll tell you that's not widespread, or maybe they don't intend to do this today or whatever, but it's this bill is to ensure that secondary market remains viable.
Thank you.
Senator Chamberlain.
Senator, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Gerlach, I didn't read this whole Cato report, but I could imagine, I understand the secondary market works. I can imagine if we don't pass this, it could hurt attendance at these games, couldn't it? It could hurt the bottom line for these teams and these venues, couldn't it? Because if the gentleman was just testifying, if he can't easily transfer his tickets to someone else, and then he's required to, go to the game with everybody, well, that doesn't that in some way will harm the venue, because those tickets aren't going to be used and people may not buy them if they can't easily transfer them. Would that be correct?
Senator Gerlach.
Senator, or Mr. Chairman and Senator Chamberlain, you certainly can make that argument. I think what also can harm the venues is empty seats. An empty seat means a hot dog wasn't sold, beer wasn't sold, or whatever it might be, and those have also an impact. Empty seats are not good, and I believe that a free-flowing secondary market fills seats.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Dan Hedlund, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am Dan Hedlund. I'm a partner at the law firm of Gustafson Glick in Minneapolis, where for the last 14 years I have devoted my practice to consumer protection law and competition law and policy. I'm here today on behalf of the American Antitrust Institute, which is the organization that Senator Gerlach referred to in with regard to the New York Times opinion article, where they were actually quoting from the white paper that the AAI recently published. The AAI is an independent organization that focuses on competition and consumer protection law and policy. I'm here today without compensation to urge your support for Senate File 425. It's important legislation that will substantially benefit consumers. I support this bill because restrictive paperless ticketing unnecessarily and unreasonably limits consumer choice and restrains marketplace competition. It is anti-competitive and anti-consumer and should be prohibited. Now, restrictive paperless ticketing so far has generally come in two types. One, prohibitions on ticket transfer, and two, restrictions on transfer. The former denies ticket purchasers the options of giving, donating, or selling tickets, and the latter permits transfers, but only with restraints that harm consumers and competition. When ticket transfer is prohibited, consumers, local businesses, workers, and taxpayers are harmed. First, consumers who buy tickets but cannot attend an event lose their money. Friends or charities that might be given tickets also lose. And to your point, Senator Bonhoff, this comes up in situations where, for example, as Senator Gerlach said, the ticket is tied to a credit card. So the only way that that ticket will be work for entry is if the person who made the purchase shows up with their credit card and is able to, hand over the credit card. So if they can't be there, then the ticket can't be used. Now, second, with regard to tickets that have a prohibition on transfer, consumers who could not purchase tickets when they were first sold cannot later buy tickets if reselling is not permitted. Third, consumers like the assurance knowing that unused tickets can be resold. Without this assurance, many consumers might not purchase tickets in advance. So, for example, if there's a concert that's 3 months out and tickets go on sale and the person wants to go, but they're not sure what their work schedule is, they may say, well, if I can't resell it, then I don't want to buy it. Where otherwise, they'll buy it, knowing that they can resell it. If a conflict comes up, then they're not out all the money for the tickets. Fourth, many tickets are sold, and we've heard testimony on this, for well below face value, actually. I mean, a lot of the stories people hear about is, oh, these tickets are going, and they're really expensive, and people are being gouged by scalpers, and so therefore the secondary ticket sales are bad. But as we saw with the Twins last year when they did not have the greatest year, you know, a lot of people with season tickets, myself included, if I couldn't go, you know, you're pretty much looking to get whatever you could get out of them. Which is a boon for consumers because people are allowed to go to some of those Twins games and get better seats for less money. Fifth, limiting ticket resale will mean more empty seats, which means less food and concessions sold. This is the point Senator Gerlach just made in terms of less hot dogs sold. Fewer parking spaces, less mass transit tickets purchased. It's less revenue, reduced profits, fewer jobs, and less tax revenue. Now, in situations where ticket transferability is limited, for example, where transfer is only permitted through one exchange, frequently the one owned by Ticketmaster, this excludes competitors from what would otherwise be a very competitive secondary resale market. Once rivals are excluded, the single reseller has no incentive to reduce service fees, innovate, or provide great customer service. Now, eliminating rival resellers also enables the team or concert promoter to instruct the single exchange to set a minimum resale price. When this occurs, it denies fans access to lower price tickets, such as recently there have been reports of NFL seats for selling for $5 for certain games and things like that, and that doesn't become possible if a minimum resale price is set. Now, if restricted paperless ticketing persists, Ticketmaster, which now has an overwhelming share of the primary ticketing market, will also dominate the resale market. Hundreds of ticket resale businesses, like Ticket King in Minneapolis, will be injured or destroyed. No competitive pressures will inhibit Ticketmaster from increasing fees or restricting consumer choice further. Now, assertions that transfer restrictions are needed to defeat scalpers and protect real fans are absurd. Purchasers of resold tickets are not lesser fans than our box office purchasers, and certainly Ticketmaster and its clients are not protecting fans by requiring their use of Ticketmaster's subsidiary resellers. To the extent that performing artists request reselling restrictions, that does not avoid the anti-competitive, anti-consumer results. In addition, keep in mind that Ticketmaster's parent company, Live Nation Entertainment, manages more than 300 artists, produces events involving thousands more, and owns or operates many of the venues where the events occur. Whatever the real motive requiring that transfers be processed by a Ticketmaster subsidiary enables them to charge sellers and purchasers substantial fees without having to win consumers' allegiance through fair competition. To defeat the scalpers, in terms of the ones that have been people are concerned about in terms of the bots, which was brought up in the Judiciary Committee, we should enforce the existing laws against ticket bots and enforce the consumer protection laws. But we should not take away consumers' rights to resell or give away their tickets as they choose. And I think the proposed amendment that Senator Gerlach had brought up, which sounds like will be discussed in Judiciary Committee, is a right step because it focuses on the bot issue. As the American Antitrust Institute recently commented, this is in the white paper, the imposition of far-reaching transferability restrictions to prevent the use of bots is like firing the proverbial cannon to kill the fly. It simply goes too far. I believe Senate File 425 promotes fairness and will benefit consumers, workers, local businesses, and the local economy. And it will not harm Minnesota in any way, and I urge you all to support it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Hedlund, I do have a question for you. You talked about tickets when they're resold in the secondary market. A lot of times the price is lower. Has there been any studies? Do you have any idea what percentage of the time ticket prices are lower? I mean, obviously the consumer would love that, but I've never really heard how that really plays out. Because I hear from the other side that, you know, you're not going to be able to get tickets and they're going to go way up. But are there any studies, or Senator Gerlach, are there any studies on that?
Mr. Chairman, I have no knowledge of any studies on the on that.
Senator, I don't, although I'd be happy to see if there are, and I could pass the information on to Senator Gerlach. My experience has simply been from personal experience or talking to other people who are fans and just knowing people who own season tickets, especially for teams, you know, when they're like the Twins are a perfect example. You know, I think probably 2 years ago when the team was doing great, tickets were probably resold regularly at above face value. But then last year with, you know, not a good season, I think interest had dropped off somewhat. So, but I'm not aware of an official study.
Right, and I know there's many events, you know, that are not a winning team. You know, so if you look across all events, I'm guessing that generally speaking, the ticket price is lower. So, any questions from the committee for Mr. Hedlund? Well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Are there any other people in the audience that want to speak in favor of this bill? Okay. Well, Senator Gerlach, I believe there are some people speaking against the bill. Can you come forward if you're in the audience? Do we have Dave St. Peter? Are you? Yeah, there you are. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave St. Peter. I'm the president of the Minnesota Twins, and we had a bad year. That's an understatement a year ago, so hopefully better days are ahead, 18 days until pitchers and catchers report to Fort Myers. Thank you for the opportunity to be back here talking about this, and certainly despite the previous testimony, we do believe that that this is really an issue between scalpers and fans. And ultimately, our experience through many years, but particularly the first 2 years of Target Field, is that the scalpers have been winning and will continue to win that battle. And, you know, certainly from a Twins perspective, we appreciate the notion of the free market. We are not a Ticketmaster team, and we certainly do not utilize this type of technology at Target Field. However, I think it's something that all industries are taking a look at from a ticketing perspective as a tool to combat the increasing number of tickets that are not ending up directly in our fans' hands and are being held and often sold at more than face value for a number of games throughout the course of our season. And, in fact, this year in Boston, you will see technology used to protect seats that sell at retail for $12 within the family section at Fenway Park that is aimed to protect against these seats being purchased by scalpers. So that's a test that the Red Sox are conducting to see if they can better ensure that those seats end up in the hands of those fans that they're really designed to. As it relates to, I guess, my view of this, I certainly agree with Senator Gerlach's amendment about bots. I think that is a huge step in the right direction. In addition to that, I'd just point out that I think the proponents of this bill, and frankly the folks largely behind it, are certainly entitled to their opinion, but they have no risk. They have no skin in the game. And if you look at the opponents to the bill, I think it's virtually every major venue in the state of Minnesota. And those are people that take tremendous risk to bring acts, to fund payrolls, to provide entertainment. And I think that that should be noted relative to who's for and who's against this legislation. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Any questions? Go ahead and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Bill Huppenbecker. I represent the Minnesota Wild. We also operate the Xcel Energy Center. And I don't know if there's a page. I got a proponents handout that Dave St. Peter talked about. If we can pass that, I'd appreciate it.
Is that in our packets?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members, what the bill does is it limits ability of fans to purchase tickets at face value. We've been unable to prevent scalpers from picking up large scoops of tickets to popular events and reselling at higher prices. Examples of that are mostly on the popular shows, concerts, where it's a hot ticket. every time we try and build a software in, whether it's trying to type in those funky numbers you get, the bot software's found ways around that. And so one of the ways to control that has been to limit transferability. That's been used very seldom in the state of Minnesota, very few instances. Target Center had used it for a Miley Cyrus concert, and at Excel we used it for an AC/DC concert where we limited transferability at the request of the band. It's not Ticketmaster, it's not the venue. We enter into a contract with artists, and the tickets are sold according to how they direct them to be sold. And in that case, they wanted to ensure that their fans could get the best 2,000 tickets at fair price, and one of the terms and conditions of buying those tickets was that it was non-transferable. And so if you didn't like those terms and conditions, you could buy a ticket in another part of the arena. So it's been the one tool that has been successful in dealing with that. Now, you know, you've heard about a lot of what if a fan can't attend a concert and it's a non-transferable ticket. Well, I think it's instructive, the fact that of the few times that it's been used, that there's been no one up here to testify or come to talk to you about having had a transferable ticket and not been able to deal with that. What that tells you is our box office has successfully dealt with any of those problems, as we do. Our box office deals with legitimate complaints. We continue, or problems, and we'll continue to do that. And if there was, I'm sure that they would have found someone to come and testify and say that that was not the case. And so an example of how the bots works and the difficulty for a hot show to buy a ticket. Recently, we had a Dell in our building. It was a half-house show. It was about 6,000 tickets for sale. The tickets went on sale, and 70% of them went to people outside the five-state area. Okay, so we know that they're not fans. Their intention is not to go to the show. Their intention is to buy these tickets to resell them for a profit. So what's the impact? At this bot software, Minnesotans, they're not going to get the tickets. They can't. They're not going to get in ahead of these guys. So for a majority of those tickets, Minnesotans bought them at a much higher price. And so, you know, we've met, the industry's met with Hennepin County Attorney, Ramsey County Attorney, to talk about this. And some of the challenges are resource issues in prosecuting, expertise issues, and jurisdictional issues. So the felony may help, but considering all those, I don't know that you're going to adequately address that, making a felony. I mean, obviously that's a judiciary question, but the fact is the bot software make it more difficult for fans to buy those at a fair price. So for us as a facility, you know, how it impacts us, well, if you're a fan and you go to concerts and you have to pay $400 for a ticket as opposed to $100, you may not go to two or three concerts in our building. You may not buy as much food and beverage in our building. And so for us, I mean, that's how it affects our business. And you know, we talk about empty seats in certain concerts. We've seen where there have been large number of tickets scooped up. And for a scalper, once they've made their money, they can burn some of those tickets. So you can have empty seats just because they've made their money. They don't need to, at that point, sell all of them. So It's a challenge. We'd say that from a consumer's perspective, this bill will continue to make it more difficult for them to get tickets. The majority of tickets events, this is not, it doesn't affect them because they don't sell out. And from the Wild perspective, we don't limit transferability. We understand our season ticket holders. You buy tickets for, you know, 41 games. We know you're not going to be able to go to those games. So I mean, that's another problem that doesn't exist. On the free market side, right now you have all these Minnesota businesses that have invested a lot of money and have the risk in these events. Public's invested significant money in a lot of these facilities. So for us on the free market, is as it currently exists, it allows us to enter into agreement with our customers with those terms and conditions. And so they can accept those or not. I mean, in the case of the AC/DC, if you don't want a non-transferable ticket, you could get a transferable ticket. So it's you're going to impose business regulation on Minnesota companies, your employers in the state who take the risk on the events, and you're without in absence of a real problem. Like I said, there's no one here saying that they've had problems with transferability, and so it doesn't. There's not a problem currently with the market. And then the other question is, if it is good public policy to do this on private business, why is it not good public policy to impose these same restrictions on the State Fair, the Minnesota High School League, and the smaller venues? I mean, what is the distinction in that policy? So from our perspective, we would appreciate your opposition to this legislation and would stand for any questions that you might have.
Senator Vandiver, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hoopenbrecher, if you're saying you're not currently restricting transfers and you don't intend to, and it's not really an issue, why do you oppose them in this bill?
Well, in the case of some of these, it's mostly not related to the team. It's mostly related to the concert. But I mean, potentially the team, we've had paperless tickets, where people can put them on their credit card, and it's actually easier to transfer them currently. So, I mean, from the team perspective, you know, we're not planning on doing it. I guess the question is, why would you want to regulate something that's not a problem? But as operator of the arena itself, the problem is on the concert side.
Mr. Hoopenbrecher, I think this is a pro-consumer bill, and I would say that because I know from having held season tickets for the Wild that they too frequently sometimes sell below face value, and I don't think that is really a problem, but I think if you restrict the ability to transfer them, it would really impact what you could get for them.
Yeah, and like I said, we haven't done that. Now, we do use when we contracted with Ticketmaster, we did that through a competitive process. We took bids. AEG is going to come out, another big industry is going to have ticketing in the future. But we do recommend that our season ticket holders resell their tickets for ticket exchange, through ticket exchange, and there's a good reason for that. I know StubHub guarantees the value of your ticket, but they don't guarantee that the ticket's going to be valid. Now, if you resell it on ticket exchange and there's no limits on price, we guarantee it's a good ticket. Because the other problem we've had is with fraudulent tickets, primarily from Craigslist, which StubHub and eBay is also, I think, a 25% owner in. And in those cases, it's been a print-at-home ticket that's been resold 3 or 4 times. Someone comes to the multiple people coming to the arena. First person that brings that ticket in gets in. So, I mean, that's an example of where we deal with the problems created by scalpers at the box office.
Mr. Hoopenbrecher, if I can follow up on Senator Vandiver's comments about consumer friendly, you handed out a opponents, but in the packet there's a larger list of proponents for this bill. But also in that, there's numerous, I would say, consumers that would like to see this legislation, but I don't really see any of that for opponents as far as consumers standing up and saying we don't want to move forward with this. Can I have your comment on that?
Well, I think there's a fan group that's been started currently, but the opponent side, it's most, you can get tickets, but at what price? I mean, if you asked, we did a study too, and if you gave the consumers a choice, would you rather have a chance to buy a ticket at face value as opposed if it was non-transferable? And, that was 90% that they would rather have the ability to do that. I mean, the fact is if this bill passes, it's going to ensure the hot tickets like the Dell concert, it's going to ensure that the scalpers are getting them. It's not the fans that are going to be able to purchase those tickets. I mean, most concerts don't sell out, so you can buy a ticket if you're a regular fan. But you're not going to get in line ahead of these bot software. It's not the way the system works.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hoopenbrecher, I've got a question. Obviously, you have a relationship with Ticketmaster. Do the NHL teams individually, such as the Wild and or the NHL, have a relationship essentially that would constitute getting into the secondary ticket market itself?
Hoopenbecker.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thompson, like I said earlier, we contract with Ticketmaster because for us, we made the decision because of the most efficient way to get tickets to our fans. Now, we do recommend people use Ticket Exchange, which is their secondary website to resell their tickets, and that's primarily for the reason I said. We don't limit resale price up or below, but we do guarantee that that is a good, valid ticket when they come to the game.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I've struggled with this issue since it was first raised, but I think the thing that's tipping me, and I've tried to speak with people at length on both sides of this issue, is I understand the arguments about a property right in the ticket that you sell, but I think where I get pushed over is if you're then sacrificing essentially that property right into the secondary market anyway and saying people can go out there and sell these tickets for whatever price they can or cannot get, depending on if it's going up or down. But you want to somewhat restrict that. How do you defend that just philosophically that, well, we don't want our tickets out there on the secondary market being bought and sold, profit and loss, except for our guys?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, we don't restrict it. You can sell your ticket anywhere. You can sell it on StubHub, eBay, Craigslist, anywhere. We recommend our season ticket holders do it. And for the buyer going there, again, unlike these other sites, we're guaranteeing that if you're in Section 102, Row 13, Seats 1 and 2, they're the seats. That's a legitimate ticket. And so if you buy through that site, you're assured that you're going to be sitting there.
Follow up.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I just want to clarify. I understand you're not doing that at this time, but essentially opposition to this bill would leave that open, that at some point, if the Wild wanted to, or the Minnesota Twins, or a concert venue, not suggesting you do, I have no idea what your plan is, but you could in some way restrict the use of those tickets unless they were coming through your reseller, right?
Hoopenbecker.
Well, we could, but we wouldn't. I mean, that's, again, it goes to the fan experience and us. It's not in our best interest to make it more difficult for our fans to come to a game, to have a bad experience at our game or at a concert. I mean, that's contrary to what we're trying to fill the building. We're trying to sell it as much as we can. So from that perspective, I mean, it would be our detriment to do that. But the questions raised from the proponents is a lot of what ifs and what doesn't exist in the marketplace. When we have an Adele concert and 70% of Minnesotans can't get a ticket to it, if they do, then they got to go on the secondary market and pay three times the value. I don't know how that's good for Minnesotan consumers or businesses. And, I mean, that's a challenge we face. What we heard in testimony is it's a lot of things that don't exist. It's what if. It could be. It's in other states. Well, it's not here. And if it is, I'm sure you're going to come back and you definitely would impose some regulations.
Thank you.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would hope that if that happens and this doesn't pass, that we would take that up because that wouldn't be all right. And so I've been troubled because the concerns that have been raised are valid, and I wouldn't want Minnesotans to have that. Yet when I look at the list of opponents and their, our wonderful, strong Minnesota-based entertainment and sports companies, that makes a difference to me that you're all in sync and you're, and you say you don't want this legislation. But I'm just wondering, and I don't know if you can answer or not, and I wouldn't expect that you could, but recently we had Cavalier come to Minnesota, the horse event. And what I saw with regard to tickets was something that I had never seen here before, where when you tried to buy a ticket, it automatically sent you to some place where you paid way in excess of what the actual venue was charging, and it looked like it was the venue. And so people were talking everywhere about, oh, my God, it's so expensive to go to this. And then if you did enough research, you learned that, no, in fact, you could get tickets, for half that amount if you went to exactly to who was putting it on, yet it was very difficult to even get to that place. Do you know why that happened? What was taking place? Does anyone...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, it's pretty common if you're good and you can get your site at the top of the Google list. There's a lot of sites that look exactly like the legitimate site. That's what happened in Cavalier. It looks like you thought you were buying tickets from them. It was actually a secondary market site. And so, I mean, that was, and there, you probably saw a lot of press about that. We combat that same thing with the arena. There's a lot of sites that look just like they're our box office. It's our arena. We spend time. We use attorney resources. We get them shut down, and then the same sites pop up somewhere else. So, I mean, that is one of the challenges, and we face that with our facility. Just that's exactly what happened there.
So a follow-up there, Mr. Chair. Senator Gazelker, anyone who could answer this question, does this bill help or hurt in that case, or is there really no connection?
Mr. Chair, I mean, it would certainly, I mean, there's not a direct connection. However, if that show ever came back, they would be prohibited, if this bill passed, from using a tool to combat that.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Chamberlain, do you still have a question?
I do. If you've contracted with an artist to come in and give a concert, and they say, we want a guaranteed number of tickets to our fans, say 5,000, are you able to just hold back 5,000 tickets or 10,000 tickets for that purpose? So you could meet that contractual obligation, correct?
Whoever wants to testify. Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Chamberlain, I'm kind of confused on the question. We sell tickets the way the artist directs us to do it. So if the artist tells us that their fan club gets the first 5,000 tickets to sell on the condition that you sign up and you say that you're a fan, you won't resell them, that's how we'll sell them.
I can clarify. You got, you know, so XL Center, 17,000 seats, something, give or take. And someone wants to go see the Wild, and you want to control a certain number of seats. I mean, people could go to the Wild website, purchase tickets through the Wild, and you could control the number of tickets you hold on to. In other words, you have to release all these, make them open. You don't have to make 17,000 tickets available to everybody at the same time. You could hold back and say, you know, this is for a particular group, and then you could sell the rest somewhere else, correct? Or am I wrong? What am I missing?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Chamberlain,
I could be confused.
We couldn't sell them anywhere else. Now, we do sometimes when we're scaling a show, we may think it's going to be 10,000 seats, and we may not open the lower or the second deck for sale. And if they have a song that's particularly hot or the band is picking up steam, we may open sections that we weren't intending on selling. But we don't hold back tickets to put on the secondary market.
I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. St. Peter and Mr. Hoopenbecker.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. I believe there's one other testifier here, Derek Rukert, if I think I'm saying that right. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record in the microphone.
Sorry.
And proceed.
Derek Rukert. I guess I kind of prepared a statement, but I'm a fan, and, you know, as a fan goes, I don't think we have a very strong organized group that has any say to argue our points of view. Can I just read from what I have?
Yes, please do so.
Okay. I attend 3 to 4 concerts a year, 20 Twins games a year, 8 Vikings games a year, 7 Timberwolves games a year, about 1 theatrical production a year, and 1 WWE show a year, and I purchase these tickets with the intention. I suppose you could argue that's theatrical too. But I purchase these tickets with the intention of attending every event. I think the proposed bill will hurt the pocketbook of the fan. The fan is the person looking for the escape, that common bond, and they don't want to be fleeced. This legislation will hurt concert goers the most, I feel. Well-established artists visit here only every few years at most. One example I have, I went to see AC/DC at Xcel Energy Center in 2008, and they haven't been here since 2001. The tickets had a face value of $95 in the whole arena. The band reserved 4 sections just for electronic tickets, and they clearly stated on the website that those 4 sections would be electronic tickets, could not be resold. Because of this practice, I was able to get good seats. Normally, I end up, you know, in the back of the line, or I get pushed back by some sites that gobble these seats up in high numbers. The resellers did purchase the next seats that were available, and within seconds, it was barely seconds, they were on sale for $500. That's beyond my ability to pay. I feel that AC/DC and a lot of these bands that do this, Twins, Vikings, Timberwolves, Wild, are trying to protect their fans and not make us upset that all of a sudden we go online and our tickets are gone. I just had a coworker who was trying to buy tickets for Florence and the Machine. Tickets were gone instantly, and immediately she gets redirected to other sites saying, you know, you can buy these seats here. I saw yesterday StubHub had 228 seats available for that show at least double the value for what a fan would normally pay. I saw U2 at TCF Bank Stadium. I try, if it's a concert I know is going to be popular, I try to go online the day of the sale, the time of the sale, figuring that's usually the best opportunity I would have to get tickets. They were $30, and they was the upper level seats, which I was looking to pay for, gone instantly. On StubHub, the cheapest seats in that area and behind the stage were $76. It's more than double the face value. And I had to purchase the inflated price tickets or my wife would have been mad at me. Same things happened with numerous bands. I tried to see The Who, and I wanted to see, this is one of my favorite bands ever. I wanted to sit close to the front. And those tickets, again, just they're gone right away. The $200 seats in the front row, which would have stretched me anyway, which I was willing to pay just for this one show, jumped to $400 in those front few rows. You know, a lot of people have to make special budget considerations to buy these tickets, and it's a band or, you know, a sporting event maybe you only get to go to once a year, and you try to save up the money for it in some cases, and then it's gone. The seats are gone. So I don't know. Part of me was thinking, is there a way, you know, if this bill goes through, could the distributor of the tickets have the rights to hold back even some tickets, you know, 20% or so? Why, you know, I don't feel the resellers need to have all the tickets, like 100% of the venue. I don't see why they would need to have control of 100% of the venue. I mean, part of me feels like in the interest of the team or the concert promoter, the artist, if a reseller buys a ticket, that's great because then the ticket's off their books that it's paid for. So why are they so enthused about being here today to speak against it? It's because it's hurting their fan base. They need to make a connection with those people to continue to want to go to those shows. People like me, I want to keep going to these shows and these sporting events. And the more and more the opportunities are taken away from me, the less and less I'm going to go. The less I'm going to buy stuff, the less I'm going to buy food at the game, the less I'm going to buy, the apparel. I'm just going to stay home, watch it on TV, and I won't care what I'm wearing. Good job. So I guess that's my take.
Thank you, Mr. Rueckert. Thank you for coming down. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to testify against Senator Gerlach's bill? Senator Gerlach.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then I would like to make a few closing comments and maybe respond to a couple of the issues that were brought up during the testimony, if I could briefly, and then we could move along. Members, I'd like to consider a couple of things. First of all, this is not an easy issue. It is a complicated issue. There's no question about it. You have a lot of you have businesses, you have fans. What we do recognize is we all recognize that bots are a problem. They are the bad actors in this whole scenario. They are. We all agree on that. So what I am telling you is let's not throw out the proverbial baby with the bathwater. We have a lot of fans. We have a lot of people who have legitimate property rights in a ticket they buy that they feel they ought to be able to exercise. And we also do. The venues and the people you heard testify in opposition to this bill make a lot of valid points. But I can't solve the bot problem entirely in this bill. You know, the amendment we'll take up in judiciary will help, but will it solve that problem? No, this bill doesn't attempt to do that. This bill attempts to save the baby. I don't know about cleaning up the bathwater yet, but save the baby. Don't do that. There's been a lot of talk about hometown businesses, hometown teams, and Senator Bonhoff mentioned a lot about that. In your packets, you have letters from the Minnesota Restaurant Association and the Lodging Association, where they list out several points, and it talks about how fans have always been able to freely transfer the tickets they purchase. With restrictive ticketing, it'll be difficult and expensive for ticket holders. It talks about what will be the impact on these local businesses. It will make it more difficult for restaurants, hotels, bars to organize groups for sporting events and concerts. It'll be more difficult to give a sporting event or a concert ticket as a gift with this with restrictions. It talks about charities that now benefit from the sale of donated event tickets and such will be impacted. All those letters are in here in your packet. Also, you have a list of opponents, but I have a letter here from the Saints, dated January 6th. Please be advised that the St. Paul Saints Baseball Club does not oppose this legislation regarding the secondary ticket market and support a free and open marketplace. The St. Paul Saints are listed on the list of opponents, but that probably needs to be updated. Those are a few points I just wanted to make. And members, all I would say is don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'd ask for your vote for this bill. Let's send it to Judiciary. We'll take up the issue of the other criminal penalties and fines on the bots there. Thank you.
Senator Rest. Senator Rest has requested a roll call. A roll call will be granted. So Senator Gerlach renews his motion that Senate File 425, as amended, be recommended pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
Chairman Gerlach.
Yes.
Senator Bonhoff.
No.
Senator Brown.
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes.
Senator Deames.
Yes.
Senator Eaton.
Yes.
Senator Gazelka.
Yes.
Senator Jungbauer.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
Yes.
Senator Pappas.
No.
Senator Reinert.
No.
Senator Rest.
Yes.
Senator Sparks.
No.
Senator Thompson.
Yes.
Senator Vandeveer.
Yes.
Wow, that's really lopsided. Mm-hmm. He didn't sway anybody.
There being 11 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails. Senator Gerlach, do you want to have any closing comments as the chair?
I have any closing. You can just adjourn the committee.
Okay. There being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.